I fucking hate you. I fucking...
Merry Christmas, Jared.
I hate you both.
I love you.
Hey everybody, welcome back to House to Do with Spider-Man, I think. My name is Jarrett.
I'm Peyton.
And I'm Noah.
And you're in for a treat today, folks, because this is the Spum Holiday Special. We each wrote our own little mini story, and we're going to piece them all together like a little, like an anthology comic. And I'm excited. This is going to be interesting. This has a very quick turnaround for the holidays. We've all been very busy.
Absurd turnaround.
We have been. We also don't really know what the other has been writing. Nope. So all three of these are going to be very big surprises for each of us.
And I also, as soon as I finished writing what I wrote, I then proceeded to take about an hour or two nap. And then I just did not reread what I wrote. So I can't even remember what I cranked out.
That's fantastic, Peyton.
Yeah. That's so good. We love
exactly
to hear
what
that.
You want to hear.
Now, we do have a few predictions before we get into it.
Ooh.
If you're joining us today, what we normally do in one of these typical episodes is we have been continuing Sony Pictures' universe of Marvel movies one pitch at a time, writing more or less full-on scripts. So that's kind of what you're going to be getting from all three of us. Cute little snippets, though. And
cute
we also...
Yes.
Yeah. We also take predictions from our audience. A lot of these came from Discord. We do have one from Blue Sky. And before I read some of these off, I just got to say, we have a lot of writers in our audience. Wonderful creatives that have great concepts. The first one is from Luke. I predict that we finally get a return to the Spider-Messiah prophecy.
What?
Comic Fan Studio on the Discord says that they predict Big Wheel will return.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I like Big Wheel.
Jonah says that they believe an incorporation of a canon Spum Santa may happen. Notably in the Marvel Comics, Santa exists. So does Santa exist in DC. I think he even exists in Spawn. Santa's real. I mean, like there was a kid the other day at work and they were like, do you think Santa's gonna bring me this book? And I was like, shoot, maybe, because Santa's real here too. So
Peyton at work, like, I mean, shit, he might.
yeah. So Santa's real, right, guys?
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, okay, thank you.
Yes,
thank you.
Historically,
have y'all seen that they've been taking the bone juice from Saint Nicholas?
What?
Yes, I have known about Santa's bone juice.
You can acquire Saint Nicholas's bone juice, and it's said to yield specific powers or something. A lot of these Christian artifacts, it makes it look like a fantasy novel, like from Sanderson.
What?
Like,
that sounds like a MacGuffin in a fantasy novel. You gotta go get Saint Nick's bone broth and it'll give you special magic Christmas powers.
You can look up Santa's bone juice on your own time, Jared. We gotta keep it moving.
More invested in that now. Let me
Typist in Neon on Blue Sky has an idea for basically like a sort of Christmas Carol story. Madame Web gets temporarily bonded to the Venom symbiote and gets a time-traveling psychic road trip of the Spum, guided by the ghost of symbiote past, which would be Venom, present, anti-Venom, and yet-to-come Carnage, which that sounds really
that's
fun.
That's freaking incredible.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
That's a wonderful idea. Typist in Neon, you should do that. Like, that
you
would
should
be,
write that, yes.
That'd be cool.
I believe somebody else said something similar, but that the three spirits were the three Spider-Women from Madame Web.
Yeah, so Sylvie suggested that on the on the Discord. She said that it would be it would be a holiday special, not specifically a Christmas special. And Madam Web's precognitive abilities have ruined the joys of Christmas for her. So the three spider women basically stand in for the three ghosts in A Christmas Carol. Which, that sounds kind of fun, because Madam Web can see into the future, so she immediately knows that she's getting those new, like, Hokas or whatever.
just make her the most obnoxious character.
Very annoying.
You would hand her a present that you have slaved over, put blood, sweat, and tears into to make sure that this is the perfect present for her. You hand it to her, and she's like, oh, are these the new J-Labs? You just want to stab her in the throat.
She doesn't even do that
because she can dodge out of the way. Sorry, I knew you were going to try to commit manslaughter. The police are on their way.
I've already contacted them 4 hours ago. Oh my goodness.
I hate Madam Web so much.
Well, Noah's today is your lucky day, because let's just hop right into it with my story. Which has been tentatively titled Madam Web's Christmas Chaos.
Oh no.
Oh boy.
Alrighty. The first of three stories from the Sony Pictures universe of Marvel movies writers, the 320-somethings that do this now.
for Sony's consideration.
Yeah. Alrighty. Let's hop into it. John F. Kennedy International Airport.
JFK's in this?
JFK is absurdly busy this time of year, obviously. With the crowded check-in lines and even more filled baggage claim, it's nigh impossible to filter through the airport in a reasonable or non-claustrophobic way. However, Anya Corazon, played by Isabella Merced, makes the best of the bad situation. She squeezes past people, slinking through the crowd until she hands her ID to a worker. Here we see briefly details like her birthday, her age, and her place of residence, Chicago, Illinois. Anya is approximately 35 now. She has been the one and only Aranya. She's in customs currently, and the airport worker looks at her picture.
You don't look a day over 24.
Thanks. It's my skincare routine. Spider silk.
Oh, I wonder if Spider-Man could shoot some of his web. What the?
Read it, boy.
No, what the fuck?
Merry Christmas. This is my gift to you. Read this.
Oh, I wonder if Spider-Man could shoot some of his web on me. Do you think that would work?
The worker seems a bit too excited at Anya's tongue-in-cheek joke, and she quickly gets serious. Spider-Man is unoriginal. It is low-key a cultural appropriator. The worker narrows his eyebrows.
I'm not sure how, but okay. Enjoy your time in the Big Apple, ma'am.
Thanks. Anya stares at the baggage claim, waiting for her bag to come through. Everyone seems to quickly grab their bag, so this like large crowd easily gets filtered down to more or less just her and a couple other people. There's a bag or two with Big Wheel or Spider-Man's mug on it, and there's even a brief moment where it's like a rocket racer suitcase. Eventually, her bag comes around, rolls off of the belt, and spills on the ground. Her costume is the first visible thing that falls out. She swoops it back into the bag, but someone saw it, and she looks up at them. I roleplay. Immediately, she cringes. I do birthday parties. The person kind of squints. Though a holiday season birthday party isn't out of the realm of possibility, something about the story just isn't lining up. I'm going to one right now as some form of a spider woman. It's for Jesus. Have you ever heard of him? The person shrugs and walks away, dragging their bag behind them. Anya is embarrassed enough and quickly leaves the airport, hoisting her bag over her shoulder with ease on account of the spider.
Spider.
It's snow.
My spider.
It's snowy and frigid in New York. She watches her breath come out in a fog. She hails a cab, hops in, and gives the address to Cassandra Webb's residence. When she arrives at the apartment complex, she digs out her key and opens the door, getting into the nearby elevator and riding up in it. In her free, bagless hand, she taps her fingers together, trying to ground herself. She's nervous. Before the door opens, she hears Dakota Johnson's voice.
It's Anya.
With the creaks of the old machinery, the door opens and Anya sees Cassie Webb, played by Dakota Johnson, who's done up in some fresh, she's gotten older makeup. Cassie is sitting at the front of the table.
I knew you would arrive when you did.
Sup?
Julia Cornwall, played now by Amanda Seyfried, on account of Sydney Sweeney's good genes, and also because she is starring across from Sweeney in the upcoming Housemaid movie. But if we want to stick with Sweeney, we can. Waves at Anya and gets back to work in the kitchen. Wow, Julia, you've gotten older.
Yeah. Guess our shared spider bite couldn't keep us all young forever.
Where's Maddie? Maddie Franklin, played by Celeste O'Connor, sits at a dinner table with her dad, her second cousin once removed, Louise, played by Georgia Wiggum, J. Jonah Jameson, played by Lawrence Fishburne, and Louise's family. So, Maddie, how's Houston?
It's okay. Not a lot of good high buildings.
Jonah squints at this. Are you jumping off of buildings or something?
No. Ed, that was dumb.
Maddie's getting pretty panicked.
It's boring to look at. Just very flat. Nothing like here.
Then you should come move back here.
Maybe. I don't know.
They all start eating in silence. Jonah raises his hands in the air. I have a great idea to cut through this ridiculous, unnecessary tension and small talk. Why don't we call my son the astronaut? Maddie pokes at her food as the tone dials. We return to Anya et al.
She will join us in 3 hours. Maddie will be quite embarrassed when she arrives.
Why?
Because, Julia, get the ham out if you would. I felt a vision that it would be burned.
On it.
Anya sits down on a couch and turns to look at Julia and Cassie. Julia brings out the ham perfectly while Cassie sits still in her chair. Although Cassie can't see, it feels like she is looking at Anya. Cassie bites her lip in anxiety. So I spent some time in the Amazon. I got a grant with the university. We're studying dead cultures.
I know.
Of course you do. Anya wanders around the apartment. Not much has changed in between Madam Webb and Ben Parker Follows the White Rabbit, and really this segment too. Everything is still where it should be. There aren't any pictures of the Boo crew sitting around. Though a lot of her life was here, Anya thinks about how so much has changed, yet so much is still the same. As Anya approaches Julia to talk and catch up, Cassie starts to speak. Both of them freeze up and look at her.
There is someone coming, and he requires some context. Not long after him, 2 more will arrive. But you have met both of them.
A figure presses the buzzer to be led into the apartment. We don't see much, but he wears jeans and some Doc Martens. We see that he's also in a blue hoodie. The door opens and he steps through. They stare at the elevator with bated breath.
You know, I always wondered how safe it is to have the elevator open right on your apartment, Cassie.
I can see into the future, Julia.
Oh, duh.
The elevator opens. It's...
You must be the clone of our godson.
Julia runs up to hug Ben Reilly, played by Jacob Timothy Madown. He looks like Peter, except he doesn't wear his glasses anymore. Also, he's blonde.
Yeah. How are you, Julia?
Ben wraps Julia in a hug.
I'm great. Long time never seen.
Never heard that one before.
He looks at Cassie and Anya.
Where's Maddie? Maddie is at the Jamesons, eating dinner. She is about to embarrass herself quite thoroughly. Oh, how? The other two are here, Ben and... But I'm already... Oh, Uncle Ben, that's right. Julia, Ben, Anya, prep the table if you would, like you will in 5 minutes.
Anya goes into the kitchen, grabbing the mashed potatoes and green peas. Julia grabs the turkey. Riley gets the ham. They quickly arrange the Christmas meal at the table.
Lovely. Right on time. They will be entering the elevator soon. Turn on the Christmas lights.
I hate her. I hate her so much.
Meanwhile, at the Jameson residence, the FaceTime connects and John Jonah Jameson III, played by Langston Fishburne, is sitting in the middle of the desert. Maddie's dad speaks, "No, I do not know who to cast for this role."
"Hey, kiddo, how you doing?"
"Hey, Uncle Jerry, how are you?"
"Well, I had appendicitis earlier this year, and Maddie has been off in Houston. But look."
Jonah moves the phone's camera so that Maddie can see John. Maddie waves at him.
"Hi, John."
"Hey, Maddie, how are you? God, you don't look a day over 25.
"Yeah, I know. It's odd. But
Kiddo, hold on a second." Jonah mutes his mic. "Actually, Maddie, I have to know, how are you not looking any older?" There's a momentary flashback to Maddie, Julia, but it's just the back of her head, and Anya all sitting in some dingy cave as a spider comes and bites them each. All of them wince whenever it happens. "It's like you got to an age and then stopped. Jameson's never aged that gracefully. And the journalist in me..."
Dad, you're muted.
Jonah mutes himself. It's a really unflattering angle. Like you know when you're like dad or somebody is holding the phone like
double full chin. Under chin.
Oh. Yeah. I know. I'm interrogating your cousin. John's kind of nervous.
"Don't interrogate her too hard."
"Even though I'm approaching 40, I age gracefully because of..."
She looks at John's face on the phone. His eyes are wide.
"John, do you care to tell the family why you're out in the desert?"
"Well, that's my son, the astronaut." John gets defensive.
"Do you care to tell the family why you're 34 years old calling yourself Spider Girl?"
Jonah freezes. He didn't know that Maddie was the Spider Girl of Houston, Texas. Maddie is staring bullets into the phone.
Well, why don't we talk about how you werewolfed out in a Denny's? How about that? Talk about a grand slam, you ass."
"Okay, if we can all just calm down."
She stopped me, yeah. "Oh, by the way, Uncle Jerry, your daughter hasn't aged a day because she got bit by an Amazonian magical spider."
"John has a stone from the moon implanted in his chest."
"A gem called the God Stone."
Louise stands up. Everyone looks at her. "I'm gay! I'll say it, I'm gay! And my girlfriend has disappeared, and I don't know what to do. And also, my girlfriend's best friend might have been the metallic witch that killed all those people from a while ago." Jonah quickly hangs up the call on a frame of John looking downright confused. Everyone slowly sits back down in their seats, and Maddie doesn't even try eating.
There was a time when I wanted to be a comedian and an actor. But I went into journalism because I always had a story to tell and something to say. I got nothing. For once, you've rendered J. Jonah Jameson, award-winning journalist and commentator, speechless. Congratulations."
"I can't elaborate as to why it's this way, but if it's any consolation, it is Spider-Man's fault."
"How the fuck?"
"Because he was a baby."
"What does that gotta do with it?" "Never mind." Blaming it on a literal infant. Sure, why not?
Back to the spider family.
"All suck. They're terrible people."
"They're all bad people. This is an Always Sunny episode." Back to the spider family. The elevator opens as Peter Parker, played also by Jacob Timothy Madowne, enters alongside Uncle Ben, played by Adam Scott. Peter is wearing an all-black outfit, and Peter freezes and points at Ben Reilly.
"Who is that? Remember when you fought someone dressed as you earlier this year? You? Look.
Pete, that's your clone brother."
Uncle Ben can't help laughing. He looks at Cassie, who smiles and laughs as well.
"The stuff I am privileged to say now."
Cassie goes from laughing to freaking out.
"Oh, please don't."
Peter throws a fork at Ben Reilly. Ben dodges it by doing a stupid flip.
"Guys."
"Dude, come on."
"I just had to make sure he was being legit."
"Okay, so meet
Ben. Ben Reilly."
"I see what you did there. Well, Ben, you've met..."
"I know who he is. He's me. Everybody, let's eat. And then we can open presents."
Peter points at Ben, like Ben Reilly.
Did he get a present? Who? Oh, sorry, Cassie. I forgot. Ben Reilly over there. I can see in a weird way. I was just messing with you. I know exactly that you feel very uncomfortable around your weird clone brother.
Peter grumbles.
Anyway, yes, he got a gift. Everyone got a gift. Most of them are good. Some of them are bad. Please, just sit down.
She's about to say his name, but Peter quickly sits down anyways. Everyone starts taking their food. Ben doesn't take the ham. They're dishing out the mashed potatoes and gravy, the eggs, like the boiled eggs, the ham, the turkey, all the fixings.
So, Ben, how is Teresa?
She's good. She's at
a school for spies for children that may or may not have been involved in several international incidents.
Ben laughs.
You got me. You and your future sight.
Peter and Ben Reilly speak at the same time.
Is that a joke or are you serious?
Peter lobs a spoon at Ben and Ben dodges it.
Boys, yes. Cassie has precognitive abilities. You know.
He points at both of them.
If it wasn't for her, Julia, Anya, and Maddie, you wouldn't be around today. Because a guy that dressed like an evil, dark, twisted version of Spider-Man was hell-bent on killing your mom.
Ben looks down and he sniffles a bit.
And don't freak out. They know you're both spider people. They're spider people as well. I miss your mom and my brother and your aunt so much.
Ben Reilly and Peter set aside their differences, and Ben stands up to hug both of them. Aw, that's so sweet.
It was 4 hours ago as well.
What?
Cassie has one of her moments again, freezing and then looking at Julia, and she waggles her finger.
Julia, I know you're about to learn that Anya had met up with your ex that moved to Chicago. You will not throw another fork.
Julia stares at Anya, and Anya looks at Cassie.
You did what?
Cassie, what kind of drama BS are you doing?
What did you do with them?
Nothing. How did you know that, Cassie?
I know all.
What? The spider women start bickering at one another. Julia lobs a fork at Anya, much to Cassie's protesting. Peter and Ben Reilly look at each other.
Wait, that means you were the one who derailed me and Felicia's relationship. You shouldn't date a criminal, dude. Dude, she was amazing. Spectacular, even. You know she was amazing. You remember it. It's bad for PR. What?
Now, boys.
Both Peter and Ben speak simultaneously again.
Stay out of this, Ben.
Everyone starts bickering now. The food becomes weapons. Cassie and Uncle Ben look at one another from across the way.
I'm sorry. I'd take full responsibility for this.
No, it's fun. You've been responsible for so long recently. Maybe you deserve to sit back and watch this.
With great power and all that.
Ben and Cassie sit back. Then there's a thud. Everyone turns around to face where it was. It's a boot! A wonderful, amazing boot! The boot belongs to a jolly, rotund man, dressed fully in red. He smiles, waving to them, unexpectedly caught.
Santa? Cassie, did you foresee this?
Of course. But the best thing about the future is it hasn't happened yet. So I thought it was just a fringe possibility.
Santa stands there, his hands on his waist.
What the frick?
It's me, Santa Claus. And I saw how you were all fighting around the table, not bringing your Christmas cheer. So I'm taking the presents back. Oh, naughty boys and girls.
How did you get into this apartment?
Through the magic of Santa Claus.
He starts grabbing the presents, shoving them into the sack. Ben Reilly stands up alongside Peter.
Yo, is nobody going to question this?
And ruin the Christmas magic?
Santa isn't real.
Santa kind of just drops his act.
Well, listen, we thought vampires weren't real either. We thought big wheels weren't real, for Christ's sake.
Peter looked at everyone. Tendrils start to sprout from his back.
What are we doing, guys? Let's get Santa.
And so everyone except Madam Web and Uncle Ben attack Santa. We get to see all these different spider people in full action, especially Anya. The apartment becomes a mess. Things are flying everywhere. Presents are being opened. The spider family are walloping on Santa. And eventually Anya or Julia gets a nice slap in. And her mask comes off. And the jolly man is reduced to Sophie Nalise playing Janine Godby, Hallows Eve.
Shit.
Both Peter and Ben are immediately taken by her.
Whoa.
She grabs Ben Riley's present and runs off, entering the elevator and having it close fast. No one moves.
Ah, shoot. She took my present. She was gorgeous. Dude, I think I saw her rob a bank once. She is fierce. Hey, I'm the single one here. No, I am. We both are, you idiot. I'm going after her. For my present.
Ben shows off his web slingers, and Peter's venom tendrils start to stick out. Both of them approach the elevator, bickering like siblings. Then the elevator dings, and Maddie steps through.
I'm so embarrassed. I'm sorry I'm late. Everyone in the family knows that I'm Spider-Girl and that my cousin John is the Man-Wolf.
Peter is shocked because he had fought the Man-Wolf in the hit guest pitch Man-Wolf by Mr. Radtastic.
The werewolf? I think I need to go by Spider-Woman. I'm graduated now.
Julia wags her finger.
No way, I'm Spider-Woman.
Actually, there is one Spider-Woman that J. Jonah Jameson has a real fondness for.
The hell?
Julia, you haven't fought crime in years.
I know that.
You've used your abilities for feats of gymnastics.
And I make great money off of it. Ugh. So what? We're just the Boo Crew again?
I go by Aranya.
Okay, so I'm Aranya.
No, that's too close to Aranya.
It's French, the language of love.
Ben punches Peter at the elbow.
All right, I'm gonna go get my present back. See you around, bro.
Peter, dumbfounded, doesn't respond as Ben swings out. Uncle Ben approaches Madam Web as the Boo Crew cleans up.
Hey, I think we're gonna set off. Thank you for the keychain. And I'm sure he likes the Las Arañas mask.
Peter's just staring at the mask.
I wear a black mask now. Learning is its own reward. And you, sir, need to look into the culture of what you are appropriating. You might learn something. I was bitten at Oscorp, not in the rainforest. Okay, still, look into them.
Peter rolls his eyes.
He still struggles sometimes.
I know. Typical Parkers.
I'm sorry your apartment is a mess.
I knew it would happen. Doesn't make it suck any less.
Uncle Ben nods at this.
I hate her. You can be such an annoying asshole sometimes. I love you, Cassie. Great seeing you.
You too.
Peter and Uncle Ben say their last goodbyes and head towards the elevator. As Peter and Ben start to ride down, Peter says,
You know, I realized that no one said my name that entire dinner.
Well, it is such a hard name to remember.
I'm a person with a name, Uncle Ben. I have a name.
Yeah, keep telling yourself that.
We fade out on the snow, starting to fall, and into our next story, the end.
Fuck. It never occurred to me. It never occurred to me that these people would know one another and regularly talk to one another.
Yeah.
Or just even vaguely know one another. Like,
gosh, this is
I fun. Had it in my head that we were deliberately keeping Peter away from his clone people so that he would find out later. But no, he meets one of them at Christmas dinner. And he's just what the fuck?
Because Ben is going to try to keep them together as much as possible.
Yeah.
This raises questions for how I'm going to write Peter and Anti-Venom.
I'm so excited for Anti-Venom, though.
All right, guys. We can talk more about each of these in depth at the end. Yeah. But do we want to kind of keep going?
Sure. Yeah. Alrighty. So part two of this story is a follow-up with a character, with a breakout character from phase two thus far that was one of my favorites to have come out of the past year of the podcast. I'm presenting to you Peter Parquois' Christmas Caper, which was named that independently of Madame Web's Christmas Chaos. Cut away from the snow starting to fall in the first story to a secluded snowy mountainside. Silent.
Could transition it from the snow of outside yeah. the apartment.
Transition the from the start of the snow to the yes. snowy mountainside. Just
I
say
can see it
like
in my head.
Just say in text on the screen, just elsewhere. Doesn't yep. no, not specific. Silent. Peaceful. Nothing but the sound of wind and the sight of untouched snow for miles. In the distance, high in the sky, a bright purple hexagonal shape appears. It spits out a small black dot which hurtles towards the ground. A distant echoing scream. Thud. Where once there was untouched snow, there is now a crater several feet deep. The humanoid figure that made the impact stands up abruptly. It's Peter Parquois from Peter and Prowler, played once again by Matt Berry. He's in a full Santa outfit, boots and beard and all. He seems to have attempted to dye his actual facial hair and signature coif white, instead coming out a very dark silver. It did not quite work. Parquois looks around.
Oh, bugger.
He taps the watch-like device on his wrist a few times. The Gwen AI hologram flits into view, buzzes and glitches a bit, then comes fully into focus.
Perchance you could tell me where I am, Robot.
My name is Gwen, not Robot. And you are in the middle of the Alaskan wilderness of Earth 6-7.
She does the hand motions as she talks. You know the one. Parquois doesn't notice, and if he did, let's be honest, he'd have no idea what she was doing.
Damn it all, Robot, I was meant to be transported to Earth 688B. Why in the bloody hell are we stranded here?
A long, strained sound comes from the tree line. Parquois looks up to see a moose has entered into the open snowy field to inspect the intruder. It moos at him quizzically. Parquois, not sure what the hell this thing is, that just mooed at him like a cow, promptly moos back.
Moo!
They moo back and forth indignantly as if they're a bickering old married couple.
Moo!
Moo!
Moo-hoo!
Moo!
Moo-hoo!
If you're done mooing, I...
Well, he started it. I can't be blamed for...
The moose stamps its hoof, having now decided it doesn't like Parquois very much at all.
What is the big-nosed deer thing doing?
I have discovered the issue with our portal rig. Scanning to find the extent of the damages.
The moose has decided it's now going to charge straight for them. Peter screams, which makes the Gwen hologram scream. They scream at one another and then both at the moose before...
Get us out of here!
Rig is still damaged. It's impossible to know where we'll...
Parquois finally just mashes the button manually himself, opening a portal directly beneath their feet. They both scream as they drop into the portal and it closes quickly behind them. The moose stares confusedly at the snow, pats it where the portal once stood with one hoof, before turning away with a hoof. A short bit later, a rectangular yellow portal opens just a few feet away from where Parquois was.
What?
Five officers clad in black and orange armor step out, batons raised. These are members of the TVA's Minutemen.
Heck yeah.
Oh my god!
Heck yes!
They begin to spread out across the area, and one in the front pulls out a tempad, scanning her surroundings. The last one out is one with much bulkier armor, clearly in charge. She is played by Gwendolyn Christie.
Heck yeah, dude.
Oh my god.
So in this, I said Minuteman. I buried the lead by just saying agent.
Yep.
This is me.
That. Oh my god.
Signal's dying by the second, Commander. The anomaly is already gone.
Can you get a read on where he's going?
Tracking it now, Commander.
Good. If he's going where I think he's going, then we can't have him messing things up even further. 688B is already enough of a mess as it is. Trace his signal and shoot him down. We'll pick up what's left when he lands. Jared, what?
Keep going.
Cut to Parqua, who is now tumbling end over end through the ringed portal, passing universe after universe in rapid succession.
Remember, 688B. We don't want to end up in 688. That one's worse.
As stated, systems are malfunctioning. Impossible to determine destination.
Impossible? Well, then why didn't you say something before I hit the damned button?
I did say something.
Never mind, I think I know where to go. Hang on tight, robot!
It's Gwyn.
Blam! A hexagonal portal opens up in front of Peter, sending him out into the open air.
What did you do, Peter?
Damn it all, it wasn't me, I swear!
Peter clings to the side of a building and scales it to its peak, surveying the surrounding area. He's in New York City, or at least a New York City. A Hydroman is towering over the coastline, 100 stories taller than any of the buildings in New York. Its arms spill out into the city streets. The whole city is flooded as far as the eye can see. At least it would be, if all the water hadn't frozen over. The entirety of New York is covered in ice, multiple feet thick. On-screen text reads, Earth 1225. Threat level severe. Spider-Man, whereabouts unknown. Peter shivers a little as he surveys the city.
Should have thickened up the layers on the costume. Can be a little nippy in the knickerbockers.
A yellow doorway opens behind him.
You won't be needing it where you're going.
Parqua groans as a small group of soldiers fan out.
Of all the days, this had to have happened to me. Now.
This does not compute. Are these are soldiers?
Minutemen, they prefer to be called. Soldiers working for the Time Variance Authority. They're not really fans of us spider people, because we tend to come and go as we please throughout each universe. They tend to know better than to pick a fight, though.
Commander speaks up.
We know you're trying to head to 688B, and while so much outside of our control has already screwed with the universe we monitor, I am sick and tired of the meddling, so I'm taking a more proactive approach, starting now.
You can't be serious. Is someone visiting someone for the holidays really that at risk of making the whole multiverse collapse? Besides, if you come after me, you'd risk starting a feud with the entire spider society. And you know you don't want that.
Are we? Tell me, do the society know that you've left? Would they even care if you were gone?
Silence. That stings a little.
I thought so. Please do not resist. Prune him, now.
Parqua takes off. The chase is on. The TVA follows Parqua close behind with grappling hooks and flight suits as he twists and dives between buildings, gliding across ice down the sides of skyscrapers. Chuck Berry's Run, Run, Rudolph plays over the whole thing.
Run, run, Rudolph, Santa's gotta make it down.
Eventually, it seems as if the TVA's lost him. We then linger on a toy store where Santa's in the window doing this robotic movement as they just kind of jostle to a predetermined like set of motions. We see that Peter Parqua is snuck behind the window and is mimicking the movements poorly of the window Santas in an effort to hide. It works at first, but the commander immediately sees it and whistles for her troops to circle back around. She begins to run in his direction.
Did you know that plan has worked in 8 Earths before this?
You got a plan?
One, but I don't like it, so I know you won't either. Hang on tight, Robert.
I'm still attached to your wrists.
Another purple hexagonal portal opens underneath Peter, big enough that the TVA agents all tumble in with him as they attempt to football tackle him to the ground. A snow pile in the middle of the woods. Cut to it. Parqua pops his head out of the snow and begins to run. Soon after, he hears several pairs of footsteps running after him.
Over here, you Scrooges! You want me so bad? Come and get me!
Another chase scene leads to a dead end against a rock face. Parqua is surrounded by agents.
End of the line, Spider. I'd ask you if you had any last words, but frankly, I don't give a shit.
Gwen pipes up, flickering to life on his watch.
Peter, tell me this wasn't your plan.
Any second now.
Any second until what?
As soon as Gwen finishes her sentence, one of the agents is pulled into the air, seemingly by an invisible wire. The other agents look up into the trees, but can't see whatever just what just happened. The agent screams, and his helmet falls to the ground. Suddenly, thick webs shoot from multiple points in the tree line, grabbing arms, legs, and batons. Agents scream and then get cut off by crunching sounds.
What's going on? Where did you send us?
The one place I didn't want to go.
A giant shape drops down onto the commander as she screams. It's a human-sized spider creature. Matted, unwashed hair tops a man-sized spider head, with 8 human eyes scattered across its face. Its abdomen is the length of its whole body, with 8 human arms tipped with razor stinger claws. On-screen text reads, Earth 688. Parqua slowly lifts his watch to his face and starts to quietly, but quite quickly, tap buttons. He's able to open a portal without the Spider-Man noticing, but when it opens, it catches 688 Peter's eyes. He turns to snarl at Peter Parqua, but Parqua's already gone. Cut to a normal-looking apartment on a normal street in a normal town. No multiversal weirdness here. The on-screen text still reads Earth 688, though now A-B has faded in behind it. Cut to the inside of an apartment door, where there's a knock. Aaron Davis, played by Donald Glover, jumps sleepily off the couch and falls on the ground in surprise. He sneaks to the door, putting one of his prowler gloves on as he looks through the peephole. As soon as he does, though, he immediately drops the glove and opens the door. Standing in front of him is Peter Parqua, in full Santa getup and looking a little worse for wear.
Merry... Merry Christmas.
Parqua, what are you doing here, man? Does the society know you're here?
Parqua groans and walks in.
I just didn't want you to be alone, is all.
What do you mean?
On Christmas. I didn't want you to be alone on Christmas, that's all. And I didn't want to be alone either.
You came here to...
Aaron's confusion softens, and he smiles.
Thank you, man. That means a lot.
We pull back as Aaron shuts the door behind him. We hear their conversation continue as the camera continues to pull back.
So what happened to you, man?
Oh, you know, the usual. Fought up a bunch of soldiers to get here.
Soldiers? How many?
Oh, you know, 20.
20?
Maybe 30.
We hear Gwen's hologram flicker to life.
It was 5. Huh?
Don't listen to her.
It was 5 and he fed them to a human spider monster. You did what?
Who wants presents?
Cut to black.
Jared, this is so good. This is really good.
Fun. So, there has been a branch of the TVA who has been watching 688B's chicanery this whole time and slowly just stewing on it because they don't know what the hell to do about it. Because magic sent some dude from a different universe there, and for whatever reason, it's not causing a disturbance. Because we saw the Spider Society was like, it's not causing an anomaly, and 2099 was like, fine, whatever. Was not happy about it. TVA, really small team that 688 had, was just slowly getting pissed off and more pissed off that shit was happening and it wasn't causing a problem, so they didn't have the authority to go down there and fix it. And so they saw Parqua was on his way there, and they were like, just get him. Just kill his ass. And so now all of 688's team is dead because they got sent it to the actual universe 688, which is that What If comic where Peter turns into a spider monster.
Incredible.
As soon as you said that, I immediately started to geek. I was like, oh my God, deep cut. Like, what a great pull, man.
So now technically we don't have to, I brought up a problem. I was like, does the TVA know about this? And then I immediately wiped. I was like, I posed a problem. Nobody asked. And then I solved the problem.
And nobody thought to look into that team again.
Nope.
Yeah.
I mean, they were kind of like the Z team. You know what I mean? Like there was like 5 guys watching this one universe that doesn't do anything, even though weird shit happens. And now they're all dead. Nice. So nobody's watching them anymore.
That's so good. That is so good. Let's take a brief break. I gotta go refill my water bottle. Okay.
While we're taking this break, we will be having an advertisement from Reanimate This from Jay Wang.
Hello, I'm Jay Wang, and I'm the main host of podcast Reanimate This. It's a movie and animation discussion podcast where we pick one live-action movie and discuss how to turn it into an animation. You keep hearing about animation work getting their live-action version. Now learn about the art of animation and filmmaking through listening to our podcast.
When you ask me what film would I turn into an animated film, I think it would be very easy to turn Reign of Terror into first a comic book and then into an animated film. It just seems like it cries out for that.
I didn't choose Satoshi Kon for thematic reasons. I chose him for storytelling reasons.
So I'm going to turn my question to you, Emmett. Would the premise of Dogville would work in the medium of animation? I just wanted to hear your perspective as a trained animator.
Well, my immediate answer is yes.
And we're back. Welcome back, everybody. We got one last story. This one is from the hit writer of Big Wheel, of Montana and the Enforcers, of El Muerto. It's Noah.
It's Noah, ladies and gentlemen.
Fantastic. This last story is titled Last Round, based on the Marvel Comics characters created by David Michelinie, Todd McFarlane, Dan Slott, John Romita Jr., J.M. DeMatteis, Cary Gamble, Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, Marv Wolfman, and Ross Andrew.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
So, we close out on the frame of Aaron's apartment and go across New York City, pan all across the city, to a lonely sunset on Christmas Eve night. This is no busy street. In fact, hardly anybody is outside at all. Between two towering brownstones sit the skeletal remains of an old neighborhood bar. No door, no walls, no seating. Just a slab of concrete dusted with snow and one remaining slab of brick wall. Against it sits the bar counter. Eddie Brock, handsome, cleaned up, the best he's looked in years, sips from his bottle. If he was cold in the frigid New York City air, he doesn't show it, aside from his visible breath. He is somber, remembering better days.
This would hit a lot harder if you'd let me get drunk, you know.
No answer. Eddie shrugs and takes another swig. He downs the bottle and sets it down on the countertop.
Merry Christmas, old man.
Eddie turns to leave, and just like he's on a rubber band, is pulled backward and slams his head into the counter. A bruise appears, then vanishes just as quickly. A white tendril emerging from his side has connected him to the countertop.
What was that for?
The tendril slowly slides around the counter, moving fluffy snow aside. Eddie, tied at the waist, tries to grab any leverage to no avail.
What are you doing, man? I've got places to be.
The Foundation can wait.
Eddie, stunned by the voice in his head, allows himself to be dragged on. The tendril, now behind the counter, begins opening drawers one by one.
No, but that's Deke stuff. It's not right to be going through it.
Seemingly ignoring him, the tendril apparently locates its target and removes a small stack of papers from the top drawer. On top is a Polaroid picture, and on the bottom is a child's drawing. Both show some water damage, but are remarkably well-preserved. Eddie takes the sheets and sighs. On the Polaroid is a picture of the recently departed Deke the bartender, played by Jeff Bridges, last seen in Big Wheel. He is in front of a Christmas tree, holding a young girl. We can assume this is Deke's granddaughter. The two are laughing joyfully. The child's drawing, then, must be the young girl's. It features stick figures of the girl, Grandpa Deke, and the girl's parents all riding Big Wheel's Big Wheel, followed by the Rocket Racer. He is, of course, New York's most popular superhero. Eddie smiles with a tear forming in his eye. He holds onto these sheets tightly, focusing especially on Deke's picture.
How do you know this was in here?
The tendril shuts the drawer.
An intuition. There is pain here.
Yeah, there's pain. The man got blown up. Put him back.
The tendril lightly folds the drawing and the picture and places them into Eddie's jacket pocket.
That's stealing the personal effects of a dead man.
Not if you return them to their rightful owners.
I can't do that. That's creepy. On Christmas Eve, too? They'd freak out.
A present, then. Santa Claus. Ho, ho, ho.
You mean a present? For the girl? What the heck do I know about what kids like for Christmas?
Broom.
What? Oh. Smash cut to a toy commercial for the hottest toy of the year. The RC Smash and Roll Big Wheel, licensed by Fisk Toys Incorporated. The Big Wheel has everything. Big Wheel action figure, of course, to drive the thing. But also a massive plastic rolling ball of death with all manner of firing mechanisms and noisemakers. The thing is cool, and every kid wants one. Comes in three colors. Classic yellow. Four colors. Classic yellow for the fans, harvester green, licensed by John Deere, flaming red for speed, and aquatic blue. This one floats. Battery sold separately, also rocket racer sold separately. Like the great toys of the past, Tickle Me Elmo, Beanie Babies, Furbies, the Big Wheel has been sold out the hour it went on shelves. No one can find one.
It is imperative that we retrieve the child's plaything.
PowerPoint gift wrap transition to, and I say that imagining like gift wrap going up on this screen and then peeling away to the next location. Eddie standing outside Rockefeller Center's FAO Schwartz, a man alone amidst a sea of hungry shoppers.
It would heal.
And you're all about that, aren't you, buddy? Eddie pushes through the crowd looking for the smash and roll. It's about what you'd imagine for Christmas Eve. Frantic parents are just trying to make it out with a good toy. And the exhausted employees keep checking their watches for when the store closes. Eddie hasn't been inside a toy store since he was a kid. He doesn't have any kids. So why would he need to visit? The department store is full of display stands for Funko Pops, Labubus, and Lego sets, but no toys to speak of. Least of all action figures. Well, that's not quite true. Arriving at the action figure section of the toy store, Eddie raises an eyebrow to find rows of untouched Spider-Man figures. All licensed by Fisk Toys, based on the current black suit. Eddie picks it up to study the figure. I hope you're doing all right tonight, Pete. He sets the toy down and turns to the big wheel display. It is picked clean. Each big wheel and rocket racer toy has vanished. Gotta move quick if you want the hottest toys of the season. Damn. Oh well. Can we head out yet? A gunshot is fired nearby. Eddie whips around. In the main hall of the toy store, Carrie Coon's white rabbit is holding an AK on one shoulder and a Santa pack on the other. In place of her white corset and blue coat from Easter, she is wearing a candy cane colored leotard, Santa coat, and red bunny ears. She's committed to the season, but noticeably stuffed up. She sneezes and sniffs, causing the crowd to jump. A wide berth is formed around her, as we can see that her rocket boots are also Christmassy. They have little Rudolph noses on the toes.
All right, everyone. Toys in the bag. If you don't fill up the sack, I'll shoot your eye out.
Scared parents begin following her directions, giving up all their hard-won bounties. Eddie sighs and steps deliberately into the open circle between White Rabbit and the crowd. Hands out, empty.
Hey, old lady, everybody here just wants to get home. Holding us hostage on Christmas Eve is pretty scroogey.
White Rabbit whips around and sharply levels her gun at Eddie's chest. She does not look well. Bad time for a robbery.
Don't do that. I just told everybody not to panic. Stay away.
I mean, the bunny thing is neat, I guess. A little bit mixed in the theming, but points for commitment.
Thanks, I just had it tailored. Achoo! Still, stay back. I will shoot.
Great. So, what we're gonna do is...
White Rabbit sneezes again. A simple monkey toy, like, you know, the... falls out of the White Rabbit's gift bag and starts screaming, causing White Rabbit to jump and accidentally fire her gun. Eddie takes the brunt of the shot and flies backwards into a toy display as the crowd spirals into panic and begins to flee. For her part, White Rabbit looks horrified and bends down to check on Eddie's body, but sheepishly picks up her bag, closes his eyes and the monkey,
and leaps away, coughing. As she is in midair, a long white arm erupts from Eddie's supine body and wraps around her ankle, slamming her into the tiled floor. Toys explode out of her bag, showering the fleeing patrons. Some grab their lost items, cheering that the Barbie was not lost. Using White Rabbit's body as leverage, a full-suited anti-venom is pulled to his full 8-foot height above the terrified woman. Anti-venom kneels calmly, straightening one of the crook's bent rabbit ears.
You are not spreading Christmas cheer. This should not be.
What the hell even are you?
An antidote.
It must be noted that Anti-Venom says all of this without a lick of irony. The dude is completely serious. Before anything else can happen, White Rabbit is yanked out from under the symbiote and pulled upside down, suspended from an LOL surprise doll sign. She starts swearing as she tries to remove the webs that now entangle her.
Are you here to help promote joy and goodwill towards men?
Spider-Man perches on the sign above the White Rabbit. Perhaps he has come straight from the Christmas dinner with Cassie. He seems tense. Also likely from the Christmas dinner. Merry Christmas, Eddie. Anti-Venom retreats and Eddie steps forth, eliciting a "Thank God I didn't kill him" from White Rabbit. She sneezes again. Eddie rubs his chest, pulling his shirt up to look for a bruise. None show.
You'd think I'd get used to getting shot by now. How you holding up, kid? Can be a little lonely this time of year.
Been fine. Can't talk. Later. Eddie shakes his head as Spider-Man swings away. He walks up to the webbed crook.
Now I hope you've learned a valuable lesson.
White Rabbit sneezes, looking miserable.
I just need something to go right for once.
Eddie turns to leave, before looking back and allowing Anti-Venom symbiote arm to envelop his own. He places the clawed hand over the woman's face.
Wait, what are you
Eddie removes his hand. Once gone, White Rabbit sniffs, but looks much better, aside from being upside down.
I feel fine. What did you do to me?
Told you. We're an antidote.
FAO Schwartz is now empty as people wait for the police to grab the villain. Yet, amidst the pile of toys strewn about the ground, Eddie stoops to grab a box. A blue, smash-and-roll big wheel.
Hey, thanks. You got me just what I needed. Merry Christmas and everything.
White Rabbit grumbles as Eddie leaves the store. PowerPoint snowflake transition. So, like, snowflakes fall. Spirals into this next location. A small house in one of the New York suburbs. There are lights in the windows and a Christmas tree also in the window. Snow is piled up against the walls. It's coming down fast now. Anti-Venom swings up to the doorstep before he shrinks back and Eddie takes his place, holding a sloppily wrapped present.
You sure about this?
It will bring healing.
You don't think they're gonna be freaked out by one of Deke's old drunks showing up tonight?
Deke showed you great respect. You must do the same for him.
Eddie nods and rings the doorbell. We hear in the house a, "Wait, June, wait for us, don't open the..." before a young girl, 6, throws the door wide. She is wearing an ugly sweater that absolutely swallows her and is missing one of her front teeth.
Merry Christmas!
Her parents, Kent and Bailey, played by Garrett Hedlund and Olivia Wilde, race to the door and scoop up June. Meet the Parks, Deke's son, daughter-in-law, and granddaughter.
Sorry about that. She's had too many Christmas cookies for her own good.
Can we help you?
Yeah, my name's Brock. Eddie Brock. I was a friend of your dad's. Deke?
A friend?
Friend might be pushing it. More like a long-term charity project. I slept on his couch more than my own bed there for a while.
Oh, you poor thing. That couch was the worst thing that ever happened to this family.
Bailey opens the door wider.
Here, do you want to come inside for a bit before you freeze?
The Parks usher Eddie inside. Eddie takes in the sights, sounds, and smells of a small but loving holiday household. A quaint nativity scene sits upon the coffee table. Mary, Joseph, baby Jesus, and a sheep with its head knocked off. The 4-foot tree in the corner has been overloaded with decorations, and June's drawings absolutely litter the floor. He can't help but notice that her drawings of Santa look a little bit like her grandpa.
Would you like anything to drink? Water? Eggnog?
Nah, I'm good. I've got to be heading out soon. I help out at the Parker Morbius Foundation.
No kidding!
Bailey turns to the kitchen.
Hey, Jackson, come out here.
Emerging from the kitchen, drying his hands, is Chase Crawford's Jackson Wheel. He is wearing a frilly plaid apron covered in flour and icing.
What's up?
Jackson, this is Eddie. He helps at the foundation. Have you met him there before?
Know him. Me and Jack have been drinking buddies for ages. Eddie and Jackson embrace, with Eddie getting flour all over his jacket. What are you doing here, bud?
Deke was like a father to me. Since he passed, I've been checking in on the parks. They have graciously allowed me to spend Christmas with them this year.
His cookies are incredible. What about you?
Oh, just stop by. Wanted to give this to Junie here. Eddie kneels to June and hands her the gift. She is thrilled.
Can I open it?
Eddie nods. June rips open the packaging and cheers when she sees the blue big wheel sitting in her lap.
It's the blue one! Thank you, Mr. Eddie!
She immediately begins to tear the box open as each of the adults can't help but stifle a laugh. What's so funny? Exchanging a look with Kent and Bailey, Jackson claps Eddie's shoulder.
Let's go get some air.
PowerPoint fireplace transition. you can picture it.
I love the transitions.
The park's back porch, where Jackson sips hot chocolate and Eddie leans against the rail with his mug next to him.
So, Deke pushed me forward. Got me to reach out for my full potential. Big Wheel was born.
That's nuts, dude. That's real nuts. You, superhero, wild.
Now I use my wheel to fight crime and find others like me. One day I'll find exactly what I'm looking for. Hopefully.
Go to the parks to let you stay.
They're great people. June's already taken to calling me Uncle Jack. Rocket Racer, my, sidekick, is out with her family out west, but her brothers are best friends with June, too. It's sheer coincidence that Big Wheel is also what she's hyper-fixated on right now.
Yeah, I'm a bit offended. Venom's more my speed.
Another white tendril emerges from Eddie's back and grabs the hot cocoa mug.
Dude, no way! You're Venom, too?
Technically, Venom's dead right now. I missed that idiot. Anti-Venom is the new guy.
Anti-Venom's teeth enshroud Eddie's head before becoming a full face.
Salutations.
The symbiote face recedes.
And you've been Venom for...
years now. Feels like just now the rest of the world is catching up to me. It's nice to know I've got pals in the business.
Of course. Shame Deke couldn't be here to see this.
Deke, yeah.
Eddie looks out into the quiet, snow-covered backyard.
Deke, May, Mary, Richard, Dr. Morbius. I've been to more funerals this year than any other year combined. 10's the 10th of season.
Jackson stands next to him.
You become more aware of it when you get into the job of looking after others. Christmas gets sadder.
And fuller. You lose people, but you don't lose what they gave you. If you keep telling their stories, they don't really leave. They just stick around.
I guess.
There is a quiet moment as the two listen to Silent Night, drifting outside from the back door. Eddie sniffs as a tendril wipes away a tear.
It brings healing.
It sure does, buddy.
Eddie and Jackson go back inside after a while, best friends again, discussing the big wheel toys.
So what's with the different colors? I thought the wheel was just yellow all the time.
I didn't have any say in it. Kingpin stole my likeness and markets it through his own toy company. The colors are dumb. I'm not a fan of the blue. Harvest Green is my favorite, though. I might try it out one day, if John Deere wasn't involved. I fucking hate you. I fucking...
Oh my god, it's evolved. It's evolved. It's been organically put into the narrative.
Merry Christmas, Jarrett.
I hate you both.
Love you.
Peyton was laughing, and so I was like, where's the blue harvest that I'm not getting? And then I went back a sentence. Because I was like, okay, there's harvest green. Is the bit now harvest green? And I went, oh.
How much have you died right there, having been tricked into making the blue harvest joke of the episode?
More just dumbfounded.
Oh, I'm so proud.
It's peak.
Read that last line again and we can get back into it.
I might try it out one day if John Deere wasn't involved.
Gotcha. Before he leaves, Eddie gives Kent and Bailey the drawing and the picture that he'd held on to. Deke kept these at the bar. Figured they should be here. Bailey takes them, breath catching. Kent pulls Eddie into a hug. Eddie stiffens, then allows it. As Eddie turns to leave, June suddenly wraps herself around his leg.
Thank you, Mr. Eddie.
Eddie freezes. Then he kneels, returning the hug carefully. You're welcome, kiddo. As Eddie leaves, drinking the last of his hot cocoa, he glances at the side of the house and notices a suspiciously big wheel-shaped object hidden underneath a tarp. Eddie toasts the Parks home with a sad smile.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays, my friends.
He sets the mug down on the porch, transforms into anti-venom, and leaps into the air.
And to all, a good night.
The end.
Damn, Noah.
These are all great.
Why am I misty-eyed?
That's genuinely touching.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, this is really sweet.
This is so sweet.
It makes me really excited for the anti-venom pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I know. This gave me a chance to, like,
kind of test the
anti-venom character. Yeah. So you want to go over our thoughts? Just
yeah,
on
let's
the
go
last...
over the thoughts on the three stories before we jump to anything at the end here.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Madam Web. Peyton, your dialogue is hilarious.
An insane, insane pitch.
It's so funny. And you just kind of took every character you could and threw them into a blender, and I'd say it worked. I'd say it worked pretty well.
There was a part of me that was almost tempted just to scrap it entirely and do the Maddie Franklin goes to J. Jonah Jameson dinner. Because, like, the Jameson family has got to be the most, like, next to the Parker family right now, is, like, the most well-formed. Everything that has happened either happens around that one or that one, like, that family or the Parker family, and then, like, some other tangential stuff. But it's, like, Maddie is, like, a spider woman. Jonah has a son that is a werewolf. Thanks to writer Jonah and also Wiki Jonah, we have a character that is like has been associated with like Swissmas and also a video woman pitch that Jonah's working on right now. And so there's like all these different things that just keep happening to the Jameson family. And it was so funny.
I had no idea the Jameson family was that like extended in the comics. I just assumed it was like him and his son and like maybe a cousin or two.
Right. Well, it's like it's weird because so many of these characters have just shown up in our pitches just like or like guest pitches specifically mm-hmm. just out of the blue. I had a lot of fun writing it.
This captures so much of awkward extended family get-togethers
mm-hmm.
on a level that is uncomfortable and insane and hilarious.
I was inspired by the Seven Fishes episode of The Bear where John Bernthal's character throws the forks at Bob Odenkirk and he's like, you throw one more fork at me, you little shit, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. And then, like, he throws another fork, and then the entire thing, like, blows up. And then, oh gosh, who plays the mom? She's in Halloween. Jamie Lee Curtis plays the mom of, like, the bear.
She's in
that show.
Jamie Lee Curtis is in the bear?
Yeah, and like, she has this whole mental breakdown and drives a car into the house. Like, it, like, everything that, like, could go wrong in this, like, Christmas night just goes wrong. And I was like, uh-huh. I was like, I want to do that, but with an annoying lady that can see into the future.
So annoying. I hate her so much. Legitimately, I was expecting the first bit I expected when I knew you were doing Madam Web was that she already knows all the Christmas gifts she's been given. And she'd be like, she'd pick it up and be like, ah, this one's the necklace. Ah, this one is the nice family portrait that I can't see because I'm blind.
Also, Peter never gets his name said in that whole bit.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until the end. I was like, did he? And I had to scroll back.
Just like in Madam Web, where they're like, I'm thinking of naming him. And then just trails off.
That's a really
It's
funny
an extended bit
joke.
That, like, none of the Madam Web side of things can say Peter's name. Or it just happens to end up like that.
Yeah. Uncle Ben doesn't even get the opportunity. Ben Riley to Peter. Ben's just like, I know who he is. Just like, doesn't say his name.
Yeah.
Ben but yeah, just, I had a lot of
Uncle
fun
Ben
with
is
that.
Just like, yeah, that's your clone brother. And Peter's like, huh? Like, that's how they meet? Is it over Christmas dinner?
Can we talk about the TVA?
Oh, we're moving on to Jarrett's now?
I want to move on to Jarrett's. Can we talk about the TVA? That's like, that was something that I had kind of thought about, like, just a little bit when I was writing Peter and Prowler. I was like, dude, the TVA will catch wind of this. Like, and I was like, I do not know how to cover that. You solved that problem just off the rip in a Christmas special.
We know from Deadpool and Wolverine, each universe has its own, like, section or floor of the TVA that, like, monitors them specifically. I was like, the people who watch 688B have to be, like, on drugs or drunk.
Terrible at their job.
Terrible at their jobs. Or just, like, curious to see what happens if they just don't do shit. And mm-hmm. I was like, what if it's just five people who got, like, kicked to this one little group? This one, like, you get to watch 688B. And then, like, shit just keeps happening. And Gwendolyn Christie's character is just like, the fuck is wrong with this place? And why is none of it setting off alarm bells? Like, we can't go down there and fix it unless it starts causing a problem. Why is nothing causing a problem? A guy from another universe has been here for a year and a half. Why is it not setting off alarms?
Conductor, we have a problem. Conductor, we have a problem.
A guy goes missing for a year, and it doesn't cause issues. A guy shows up for a year who's not supposed to be there. Doesn't cause issues. Why? And so he's just like, sees another person going there, and he's like, and she's like, no, fuck this guy in particular. This is the last straw.
It was so good.
And then their whole team dies, and nobody checks on them. That's my headcanon, at least, is that nobody checks on this group. And so from now on, time shenanigans, multiversal stuff, it's like, where's the TVA? Oh, the branch that follows them just is dead. They don't.
Dead,
yeah. And nobody. Nobody's checking up on them.
Yep, just gone. We had to take him out.
Anytime that we tap into the multiverse, it's always the stuff that I personally would love to see in a multiversal movie that they just actively, like, don't want to do. like this is a succinct story that it hops these places. But these places, one, act as good, like, bouncing off points for action sequences, and two, like, almost sort of have a thematic thing. Like, since this is Christmas, of course the universe where Hydro Man has seemingly destroyed the entire world is, like, frozen over. Like, yeah, it's Christmas time. I really, really enjoyed that in Earth 6-7.
I'm upset that Earth 6-7 was mentioned.
6-7.
I think that's my equivalent of the Blue Harvest.
I really wish I could have extended out that chase sequence to Run Run Rudolph.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the imagery though that you had was very good, like chasing around a like frozen city. I think there's a lot of action that could be done there that's very easily pictured.
I'm still misty-eyed over Noah's thing. That, gosh, just makes you like Deke only appeared in Big Wheel, but like you kind of feel this presence, and then the whole sort of like ending thing about talking about loss, and if we just keep bringing these people up or discussing their stories, it doesn't feel like they're really gone. Like, I don't know. That's very touching and very, very powerful, and it hits heavily. And I'm glad that Jackson and Eddie have gotten to meet. Unironically, these three little snippets, like, have essentially made the holiday episode a required listening for the rest of Phase 2.
Yeah. So this pitch was originally, or the script, originally it was going to be more of a full-on Jingle All the Way riff, which would have focused on this this big wheel toy being the big toy of the season and everybody wanting to grab it, be much more comedic. But I figured that because we haven't really focused on Eddie all that much, it'd be nice to have him be one of the focal characters of a holiday special with us.
For sure.
I started thinking about maybe we put Eddie into the Jingle All the Way thing, but who would he be chasing the toy for? That's when I thought about Deke and how Eddie had been hanging out quite a lot at the Bar with No Name when he was undergoing cancer treatment and really sinking into depression, really sinking into his drink. And so I thought, well, he would probably know Deke. And if Deke was as nice to Eddie as he was to Jackson in Big Wheel, then there would have been something important there, some kind of an important relationship, and it built from there.
Yeah. Something that kind of hit in your writing of Eddie is that he is basically with the anti-venom powers, he's basically become a what Martin Lee couldn't do.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. And and yet, like, there's this sort of still this feeling of like struggling to feel like he's doing any good. But by the end of the story, he does start to feel some semblance of that. A very well written piece of storytelling, Noah. And I wish that it was like a genuine comic. Like, I would read this. Like, it was really well done. Do you think that the White Rabbit got her new outfit done by Cooper Cohen of Jessica Drew?
As soon as I said that I just got it tailored, like while we were recording it, I was like, wait a second, that's probably where she got it tailored. So yeah.
Hell yeah. Good. Cooper, yes. Get your bag.
We can make it canon that White Rabbit is one of his most consistent customers, because she has a different rabbit outfit for
each occasion.
So many parts of the year.
White Rabbit raiding the agricultural convention that happens, and she's like John Deere-fied.
Yeah, in the harvest green.
In the harvest green, yeah. We got post-credit scenes.
Got post-credit scenes for the holiday special.
This wouldn't be a Spider-Man podcast movie if there weren't post-credit scenes. So let's start with the mid-credit scene. Why did I write it like this?
Brother.
This isn't the real name of Felicia Hardy's apartment.
Okay.
But for the audience at home, because I was writing this in a semi-fugue state, I wrote Felicia and Jessica's vape shack. They don't vape.
That's great.
This is their apartment.
Perhaps they call it their vape
shack. Yeah.
For no discernible reason.
This is their vape shack. Felicia Hardy, played by Mikey Madison, decorates the tree while Jessica Drew, played by Nicole Maines, wraps presents. Felicia hums some Christmas carols while Jessica is watching Eight Crazy Nights by Adam Sandler. Yes. A laptop is open next to her following the whale scene at the inn. Such a shitty movie, but it's also funny. A laptop is open next to her following the whale scene at the end of Jessica Drew. Similarly to Mr. and Mrs. Parker, this apartment is kind of split down the middle in decorations. There's Christmas and Hanukkah all throughout the whole place. There's a knock on the apartment door and Felicia opens it. Janine Godby enters.
Dear gosh, Felicia, you gotta help me. I messed up. I think I went to Spider-Man's Christmas dinner.
What? Jessica turns.
Oh, was it at an apartment with a cool window, but a blind lady that knew a lot of stuff for some reason?
Yes?
That was Godmother Cassie. She's cool. Why would you rob her?
I was dumb.
You!
They turn around to see Ben Reilly.
I heard about you. I found one of your masks, and I just want to say...
The music gets all Hallmarky. The lighting literally changes. It's beautiful now. Ben removes his mask, showing off his beautiful blonde locks.
Ugh. I really think you're something cool.
Janine blushes.
Really?
Felicia walks to Jessica. Is that...
I think so.
You know, Peter Prime said the same exact thing to me when we first met.
Really?
Jessica's blushing.
I think you're something cool, Felicia.
Oh, stop it. Felicia's low-key blushing too, but it's interrupted by Ben pointing at Jessica.
What the hell?
Jessica, offended, puts her hand to her chest.
What's your problem? You're like me, but a girl. Yes, dude, I'm a clone of Peter Parker like you. I went through this whole thing months ago. Can we just skip to the end here?
Ben lobs a spoon at her and she dodges it.
Whoa.
Ben smiles.
Got a crazy Christmas gift? A clone sister.
He looks at Janine.
And a really cool villainess friend.
Janine chuckles and looks at Felicia with what the fuck eyes. All right, Spidey clones. Exchange numbers. Stay in touch. This is too much stuff for the holidays. Can I just have the apartment to myself and my roommate? Ben and Janine look at them and at one another.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, totally. I'm sorry, Felicia.
It's okay. I just don't want this to be the hangout spot today. Come back on Boxing Day. Ben and Janine start talking as Janine hands Ben the present that she stole. It's a capybara plush toy.
Whoa! This thing sucks!
end of this mid-credit scene.
You like leaving it like that, baby?
Just leaving it at this thing sucks. Because Madam Web just gets the worst gifts ever. She got fucking Ben Parker a keychain.
Capybara. Why?
I was like, what is the most stupid thing that like could come to my mind in this instant? It is like a little capybara plushie. Like, you can't, if you look at a capybara plushie that's like tiny, that's just a guinea pig. Like, that sucks. Like,
Capybaras had really good PR. They're not. They're nothing special.
Oh, come on now. I've had a capybara come to work.
He's a little guy.
They're really chill, dude.
He's a really chilled looking dude.
They're adorable.
You've had capybaras come to... Okay, I can respect that. I can respect that.
Yeah.
Have you seen the photo of him getting up out of the water and he's got a little orange on the top of his head?
That's awesome.
Look at him.
I have not.
He's cool.
Capybaras.
Are we ready to move on to something completely different?
Yes.
Yeah.
Snow falls on a quiet neighborhood with lights all aglow. We look in the window to see that Adrian Toombs is setting up Christmas decorations and doing several other Christmas traditions with his family. Decorating cookies, setting up the tree. He reads The Night Before Christmas to his daughter before bed. He heads downstairs, puts on his coat, gloves, and hat, kisses his wife, and heads outside. We follow him down the sidewalk, his shoulders tucked in to help block the cold just that little bit more. The snow continues to fall as Adrian walks into a graveyard. A hummed rendition of Silent Night plays throughout the rest of this scene. Perhaps he walked by the house that Eddie was at and heard it and kind of hummed it to himself, and it becomes just this background track as it gets louder and becomes like a chorus of just humming. We cut to him stopping at a grave.
Hey, Doc, I'm sorry I don't get to visit much. Family and all that. This is silly.
He looks around just to make sure the graveyard is still empty.
Never got to thank you is all. When I went to see my family, I got so excited, and then I looked back and you were gone. I had meant to go back to the hideout and visit again, but I just never found the time. Then I heard what had happened.
Adrian pauses, collects himself, tries.
You saw good in me that I thought was gone, and you encouraged me to grab for that second chance if I had the opportunity. You saved me. That's what you do. That's what you always did. Help people. I just wish you had gotten to have that second chance too.
He stoops to one knee, lighting a candle at the base of the stone along with a small piece of paper, an origami bat.
Merry Christmas, Michael.
He stands up, breathes, and begins to walk home. We linger on the gravestone, only now seeing what it says. Michael Morbius, healer, hero, friend. Music fades as the screen fades to black.
Damn. What a good companion piece to the, to Noah's.
Yeah, that goes really well with last round.
Wow. Well, that was a special, y'all.
Great work, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same time next year?
Same time next year, man. This was a lot of fun. I think this format is the way to go going forward. Just three mini stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was cute. So, Ben has now gotten to meet Jessica.
Yeah, let's go over the lore implications here real quick. So Peter has met Ben. Peter has not met Jessica, but Jessica has met Ben.
Mm-hmm.
All of the Spider Girls are now kind of in New York City, just kind of hanging out with Cassie. It is confirmed that Peter Parquois massacred the TVA. connecting to 688B, and he now has a Gwen AI with him all the time. Eddie and Jackson are drinking buddies and have known each other from beforehand. And Adrian Toombs is still living out his best life and visits Morbius's grave every now and then. Did I miss anything else?
Oh, the Hallows Eve post-credit scene. The wiki says that the post-credit scene was going to be that Ben and Janine meet and flirt. But we had talked about it in the episode. I had re-listened to the episode a couple days ago. We had talked about perhaps the mid-credit or the post-credit scene could be Ben finding one of the masks after a robbery And so that's the new canon post-credit scene for the Hallows Eve guest episode.
Fine by me.
Alrighty.
I like that.
Yeah, I like all of this. This is required listening.
Officially required listening.
This is core canon now. This is core canon, yeah. This podcast has been a gift for me. I've experienced a lot of like changes in the last like couple months, but getting to write Peter and Prowler and then Jessica Drew and working on Solo has been some of the most like almost kind of therapeutic work, but also like there's something about this podcast, knowing that we have grown a bit of an audience that listens to our stuff and enjoys it and discusses it. The Discord has been a blessing. The growing Blue Sky and Instagram following has been a blessing. I am lucky every day to get to work with you two and get to talk to our budding community of people. This has been like the greatest gift that I've gotten all year. To get sappy for a minute.
Yeah, truthfully, thanks, just this community, this little project has created something far bigger than I thought it was going to be when we started. I think we all kind of thought that it'd just kind of be a little personal project. And it's already becoming more than what I thought it would be. And I am thankful every day for this little pocket group of people who read, watch, listen, write, and just enjoy this cool little thing that we made that was just kind of on a lark.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun, and it means a lot.
Same here. It's been a great challenge to keep our writing up together, to hold each other accountable, to find each other's strengths and weaknesses and be able to support each other through it. And same for the people that listen to the episodes and stuff, and kind of having a community where we're just all growing in our skill together.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. So this is, it's odd to say that the next time that you all will be hearing from us will be in 2026, but we're going to be taking a bit of a break in January. There actually might be probably a shortish episode. It might be all of us. It might just be one of us kind of talking about some things that we're doing during the month of January. We will be leaving Substack for Patreon. We will be opening a Patreon. However, the Discord will remain free. We're going to be spending some time talking about what it would mean if you were to give us a couple bucks. We'll probably talk about that sometime in a couple weeks. But you do not need to pay any money for this. This is going to continue to remain free. This will always be a free thing. The Discord will be a free community to join. If anything, it might be like some bonus scripts, like some scripts, our scripts. If we get enough following, maybe a bonus pod, possibly. We're going to be possibly doing a new trailer thing where we will have trailers for the next couple pitches of Phase 2. And then we're going to be having an updated logo. Those are like the three biggest changes for our podcast endeavor of Has to Do with Spider-Man, I think. Otherwise, special thanks to Andy, our wonderful editor that has joined us for Phase 2. Yet another one of our like gift people that a person that has added a lot to the podcast and also to our day-to-day life. Thank you so much, Andy. Thank you so much, Jonah, for keeping the wiki updated. And thank you, dear listener, whoever you are, for listening to us talk about Spider-Man fan fiction and writing like film leak scripts.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We're excited to take a little break and come back fresh and new and continue phase two. But until then, y'all have a happy holiday. Take care.
Bye-bye.